Ladies and gentlemen, let's dance.
I played more or less everything on Eternal, but I did get some guests, and I found them all through Instagram, funnily enough. Instagram's kind of become the MySpace of today, but in a good way. I think amongst musicians, or at least the friends I have following me and who I follow, there's a real sense of community. And for a while, it was like that with MySpace as well. I actually organized an entire US tour through MySpace back in the day. I don't think it had happened now, but yeah, Instagram has got that community feel. And anyway, I kind of put the word out on Instagram that I need people to create drum tracks and whatever, you know, samples and things like that, and people responded really well. So in a way, it's kind of a made on Instagram album. Is by UK artist Peter Knifton, and this artwork originally appeared in Omni magazine, which was a famous science fiction science magazine back in the late 70s into the 80s and the 90s, I think. And I've had my eye on this for years, and I decided to track down the artist and see if he'd let me use it, and sure enough he did, which is great. I love using art by artist from that period, just because it's just got a certain style and a certain vibe to it that I love and can't be replicated with digital art these days.
Thank you.
Most of my fan base is from the US, but Australia and UK and Germany as well, but you know, a few fans in other places too. But I think US fans are a little bit more engaged, or at least the ones that are on social media are. You know, I can see the people who comment a lot, and they're obviously a lot more engaged. But there are fans on my mailing list who have been fans right from the very beginning, but they've never had a social media presence. There was no particular theme for this album. It more or less developed as it went along, or apart from the general science fiction themes that I tend to gravitate towards these days, mainly through the artwork. It just developed as I went along, and came together pretty quickly within a year. Usually it takes a year and a half to 2 years for me to put together an album, but I don't know, these days things have just sped up, and you don't want to get left behind, so I deliberately sped things up. I hope it hasn't suffered for that, but I don't think so. I'm really proud of it, actually. And there was a lot of interaction with fans on this album, especially through social media, where I'd upload demos and snippets and get people's reactions and invite collaboration. So, yeah, I think it turned out pretty well. The song that diverged from my usual kind of sound the most, I think, is one called Immortality Part 2. And it actually, it's a reworking of another song, funnily enough, called Immortality Part 1. The remix was kind of a throwaway joke, actually. Someone on Instagram said, in a joking kind of way, I'd love to hear a metal version of that. And I must have uploaded a snippet of Immortality Part 1. And so just for fun, I went away and quickly remixed part of the song and chucked in a whole lot of heavy metal sounding guitars and all these hip hop beats, which is so far from what I'd normally do. But then I listened back to it and thought, wow, actually, I really like this. And I uploaded that to Instagram, and it got a huge reaction, actually. So I kept it and put it on the album, and it was originally supposed to be a joke. So there are little elements of that peppered throughout the album. I I feel like I've kind of loosened up, probably not the right term, but I'm a lot more relaxed in the writing of this album, and I let myself be a bit freer. The previous couple of albums have been reasonably slick, very song sort of centered. I don't know. I just haven't been as hi-fi in this one. I've let myself be a little bit lo-fi and have a bit of fun. Not that I didn't have fun in the other albums, but yeah, this one I just freed myself up a bit more.
I have egg, sausage, chips and beans, and a tea.
I've been listening to a lot of ambient instrumental over the last 6 months to a year, and I'm sure it's influenced me. If not directly, then it's definitely kind of filtered into my subconscious, and it's coming out in the music. But I've always liked that style of music, particularly the old school people like Brian Eno and Harold Budd, but then also people like Steve Hackett. I'm just trying to think. Brain Ticket, which was kind of a weird sort of semi-prog rock, kraut rock band from the early 70s, Tangerine Dream, all that kind of thing, which I really love. Like I said, I think it's influenced me, if not directly, then absolutely subconsciously. Favorite albums of instrumental music? Ooh, that's a hard one. I'm just going to have to go back to my old favorites, Brian Eno and Harold Budd, The Pearl, and also their album, The Plateau of Mirror, and Michael Brook, Hybrid. Okay, that's three, but there's probably loads more. It's just impossible. But yeah, if I had to, you know, do the Desert Island thing, it'd probably be those three albums. Next for All Indie Radio, I've actually got another album already in the can. It's actually been in the can since 2014 with an Australian artist called David Bridie. It's very ambient music, piano and electronics. It's really, really quite a nice album, but just haven't really got around to releasing it. So hopefully that'll be next cab off the rank. Then there's a couple of collaborations with another Australian artist, Josh Roydhouse. He plays piano. So it's a similar piano and electronics vibe. And probably a remix album and a new original album. And then maybe another album with Steve Kilby, who I've worked with on a few occasions. And then who knows? Hopefully a tour of some sort, but that's all up in the air at the moment. I've got enough to keep me going until then.
Label GM Records, this is pre-internet, started in 1984 as far as releases coming out that year. And at that point, when I started the label, I was using it as a vehicle to get my own music put out. I had been shopping around my music to a lot of different record labels at the time, and it didn't seem like anybody wanted to take the risk of putting it out, so I just decided to put it out myself. And so during the 80s, I was releasing music on, you know, the formats of the day, which was LPs and cassettes, VHS videos. Those were the big popular formats, VHS videos, cassettes, mm-hmm. records, 45s, that kind of stuff. And then as it got toward the very end of the 80s, right about the start of the 90s, and we did the shift, started doing CDs, of course, which were very new then and very expensive at the time. And it was on during the 90s, during that decade, that I started having other artists come onto the label. One of the first artists to be signed to the label was a guy named Ed James. He's from North Carolina, and he did power pop music. Although the label is not strictly a power pop label, it's very eclectic. It covers many genres, electronic music, prog rock, experimental folk music, modern classical, some hard rock, and a lot of classic rock stuff. And then, of course, there's the power pop and jangle rock, stuff that's kind of rooted in the sound of the birds. And then we started doing a lot of compilations, too, and then that really opened it up the door, you know, for many, many more artists have been on the label since, and we've done a lot of compilation CDs. So I don't even lost track of the number of releases after, you know, over 30 years of doing this, 35 to be exact. And it's just a lot of stuff that came out. And of course, we got into the DVD thing too, which even that's kind of outdated now. But at this point, we're putting out mainly CDs, and it seems to be that although the major industry would like you to think it's a dead format, it's actually not, and it's really been the most practical format for most of the bands, especially if they travel or tour. You know, you can lug around a lot of CDs, but you can't lug around too many LPs. And
that's been a thing. I mean, I love vinyl as much as the next guy, and when it's affordable, you know, I'll go that route. But this idea that CDs are the equivalent of an 8-track cartridge, I don't buy it. I mean, if you look at the sales in Europe, people that care about music are still buying CDs.
I will never understand
how anyone could think streaming an MP3 or downloading an MP3 is better for you than owning the CD, mm-hmm. other than if you're just too lazy to keep up with a disc.
Mm-hmm. And many times the reason these trends come is they're actually being perpetuated by the bigger higher ups in the industry that want to push a certain format and
right.
and make that format popular. But as far as myself as an indie label, I still sell way more CDs than any other format. And so we're not going away or going to discontinue the CD thing, even though some people have said, you know, the CD format's dead. It's not really true because I distribute other labels, and they're sending me CDs all the time. They're still having them made, and you know, different CDs from different bands from all across the United States and in European countries sending me their CDs to distribute and sell on the website. So what Jam has kind of evolved into, instead of just being a house label now, is it's kind of a distributorship melting pot for indie music from all over the world. And because I do travel quite frequently with my band and in the United States and in Europe, I come in contact with lots of people who are manufacturing and putting out their own music themselves. And so that's how it happens. It's a real nice thing. It kind of just invented itself. It wasn't really a game plan. It just, the whole situation from the music scene kind of invented itself. And there needs to be a place that people can go to find all this grassroots music. And so that's what the website's for. It's called jamrecordings.com. And people there can hear stuff and check it out, see what they like. So it's still for people who champion music as an art form and want an album, a collection of songs, and sit down and listen to it. That's where we're coming from.
If you go to that website 3 times a week, chances are there'll be a new release on that front page more often than not most days. You've had a couple of releases lately. You want to talk about those? You had a kind of a dulcimer based instrumental project lately. That's the one I remember the most. And you've had two come out recently.
Yes. That release, which was fairly recent, is called Dulcimer Dance. And, about 5 years ago, as a birthday present, a person gave me a real nice dulcimer, and so I decided to learn it and study the instrument, and I began buying lots of folk records and listening to dulcimer music and learned how to play the instrument. But then after I did that, I had an idea of using the instrument in a format that I had never heard it used in before, and more of a progressive rock format, and a full band format with drums and electric guitars and mellotrons and synthesizers. So that's what the album became, and I haven't heard this done by anybody else, so I do think it's a groundbreaking musical adventure. All the Dulcimer records I bought were just like mountain music, more like hillbilly folk music,
right?
Which I like, but I wanted to use the instrument in a different way that it hadn't been normally used. And so that was a real fun project to do, and I found that the people have heard the album. Some of the people ended up really liking it, which I'm glad, because you know, when you're doing something that hasn't been done before, you really don't know what kind of response you're going to get.
Got another album that came out almost simultaneously. I'm really close to that one.
Yeah, that is an album called The Gift, which technically could be referred to as a Christmas album, but it's all instrumental, and you could listen to it any time of the year. And but it's a prog rock album again, and I've never heard anybody do a Christmas themed album with a prog rock style. So I wanted to, again, kind of try to push the envelope there. And of course, instead of, you know, there's no songs about Santa Claus. It's not that kind of thing. It's more about the season and the beautiful side of Christmas and the nice weather and the snow and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's instrumental. So it's whatever, but people who listen to that, they just listen to it just like any other album. It doesn't have to be listened to just at Christmas time.
Thank you.
again, the website is jamrecordings.com. Now, did you start out with like a mail order catalog, like a lot of other pre-internet?
Yeah, in 1984, when the label first started, we started out as a mail order catalog, and it was very, very primitive a process because we'd had, you know, put ads in magazines, you know, the magazines that existed at the time, and many of those magazines don't exist anymore. But there were, you know, a lot of indie magazines were. Hundreds of them all across the country and in other countries as well. So we just put those ads in there, and it was really effective. Now, one magazine that survived all these years and still going is Goldmine, and it's a good magazine. They went had their ups and downs like everybody else, but they're still here. And so I probably advertise more in that magazine than any magazine, and seems to reach a niche audience that are true music lovers and not just wanting the flavor of the month. So that when the internet came along and that was brand new around, you know, the early 90s, we had one of the first web stores, and we started everything kind of early on. And that really changed things then. I was able to really kicked it up quite a bit.
That label is kind of a family affair called the Glow Friends. Those are your kids involved in that band, isn't that right?
Yes. A lot of the artists on the label I do consider family and friends. And so Glow Friends are on the label, and they released, I think, about 7 albums over the years. And they just changed their name to Tambourina. So when the next album comes out, which is finished, but I don't know when it's coming out, maybe in a couple months, it'll be under Tambourina, and hopefully people will figure out that it's this same band. They just changed the name.
Mm-hmm.
They got tired of that name, and they wanted to change it. I just released an album under my name, Jeremy, which is called Pop Overflow. It's kind of a play on words. It's a jangle power pop album, and I hadn't done one of those in a while, so I thought, you know, I'd put one of those out again. And that's rooted in a lot of 60s bands, so reference points of what that music on that album sounds like is groups like The Who, The Birds, The Beatles, The Kinks, and that kind of stuff. And I, of course, grew up listening to that, so occasionally I like to put out an album that is like that, you know, real short, 2-3 minute length songs to get right to the point. The opposite of prog.
Right.
And then we've had some other bands, newer bands that have signed a label and released stuff. There's a here in Michigan, a band, kind of a folk band. They're called 30 Steps to Forward, and it's a brother and sister, and it's just very ambient sounding folk music. Which is kind of something different for the label to do. Although we have jumped all over the place, we've put out shoegaze compilations and many, many compilations under the name of Sweet Relief, which are charity CD projects. And music, the sales of it goes to help for what different needs, whatever, everything from cancer research to helping people with natural disasters that have taken place. And so we've done 4 volumes of that, and there's a 5th one on the back burner. And one of my other kids has a band that's called Cardboard Highway, and that band sounds more like a lot of the modern indie pop that's been coming out. So that's interesting. And, of course, there is... Third of Never have released several albums, which are all very, very good albums. And then there's going to be some more projects coming from offshoots of that band.
Mm-hmm.
And these are, you know, I'm mentioning the bands that are currently active. We've had other bands on the label that maybe aren't as active at the moment, but I know at least for myself, I plan to continue. And a number of years ago, I started a band called the Lemon Clocks with some of my friends. And actually, one of them, Stefan Johansson, he lives in Sweden, and we started this band. And that's a psychedelic rock band. And we've released 5 albums, and that band is ended up being a very popular band on the label, and so we continue to keep that going. It's not really a side project. It's actually become kind of more of a main thing for this last while. So, bands that have been artists, I'll just drop a few names of some of the artists that have been on the label. There's a band called the Lolas from Birmingham, Alabama. They put out a lot of albums. Guy from Chicago named Phil Ngotti. And those of you who are familiar with the band Material Issue from the 90s, Phil ended up replacing Jim Ellison in that band after he passed away, because he sings and sounds a lot like Jim Ellison. So they now put out, they're doing music under the name Material Reissue. which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I could go down a list of a lot of more things, but I think you kind of get the idea. It's a lot of genres, and we're just kind of just putting out stuff that we feel like putting out. We're not really putting it out based on whether we think it's going to sell a lot or not. I think that's what causes labels to go wrong, is when that becomes the deciding factor. If it sells a lot, then we'll put it out. If it doesn't sell a lot, we're not. That becomes motivation by money and not by the music being good. So if I think something's really good, I'll put it out even if it doesn't sell well. And that's where you draw the line in the sand between, the love for art or the love for money. You have to draw a line in the sand if you want to stay pure.
One of my favorite albums you put out, and I'm on my porch, I don't have any notes with me. It's that acoustic guitar album you put out. Is it New Day Rising? What is the name of that album?
Yeah, that's right.
That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Funny you mentioned that album, because somebody just yesterday was saying that they, strangely enough, were playing that album at a skate park where kids are skateboarding.
Yeah, that is odd, but whatever works.
You never know what's going to happen when you put something out. And of course, New Day Rising, what that is it's just pure guitar music, and it's very much a laid back thing to just put on, and you just kind of get into an atmosphere when it comes on. And I think obviously one of the pioneers of that kind of mindset was Brian Eno, that things didn't always have to be a hit song. It could be just an atmosphere. And so I've released quite a few albums with that idea in mind, is that you put in an atmosphere into the air when you play it. And if you like the atmosphere, then of course it'll become a go-to thing. I even have certain music that I like to put on and fall asleep to. Some people might not think that's a compliment, but for me, if I fall asleep to an album and it makes me sleep real good, that's a compliment.
Well, no, there's a guy, I think his name is Steve Roach. He's built a whole career on doing that kind of music.
Yeah.
And the way things are now, you know, if you've had a really aggravating day, if something will help you get to sleep that doesn't involve throwing pills down your throat, that is a fantastic thing to have.
Yeah. You just like, you know, instead of turning on a fan in your room and falling asleep to a fan, mm-hmm. you put on some really nice music, and that creates the same effect. Because I guess our brain, I don't know how it works, but sometimes when there's a certain sonic tones going, mm-hmm. sleep better. Maybe you actually sleep better.
See, I'm in overdrive because I'll have the fan and the music going at the same time.
Well, that's good. Why not? Why not? You know, it's it all works together. So I think there's a lot of different purposes for music, and I think having an open mind and not just thinking in terms of radio play or how many downloads did this song get kind of misses the point sometimes, because music can be just something to make your day go better. And if it's a chill-out CD and that's what you need, then that, you know, it served its purpose, I think.
As far as the staff at Jam Recordings, is it you and whatever family you can get a hold of, or what's the scope of your operation?
Yeah, I have my family help me with, as far as shipping stuff and mailing stuff and packing stuff up. And so I just run it out of my home, and, you know, so it's not like, you know, you're going to go to some building that says Jam Records. I do get phone calls where people think we're like, you know, they think they're calling Capitol Records or something. So is this Jam Recordings? Can I speak to your A&R man? And, you know, and I just have to say, one man, many hats.
Yeah, well, a few years ago, some people were sniffing around one of our songs to put in a movie, and they ended up putting it in the movie, and then the producer said, you got to cut $80,000 out of the budget. So the first thing to go were all the original songs. But I would love to have been on a fly on the wall, because as I remember it, they called you first, or contacted you first.
Well, I think a lot of these people that are doing movies now, I've gotten quite a few calls over the years. They're going now to the indie artists and labels like that I have, because they can't afford, you know, to use Led Zeppelin in their soundtrack.
Right.
You know, and I think they are aware that it's not a staff with a bunch of people, you know, that it's usually just a guy or a girl. I mean, over the years of the other labels that I've talked to, I mean, I remember when I basically talked to this label called Frontier Records out of California. It's just this girl named Lisa running the label, you know.
Well, those are always the coolest ones because it's down to what one person or a handful of people like. It's like Monty Python. That kind of situation couldn't exist now because it was just basically what made those six people laugh. They didn't have to go through 10 managers and focus groups and this and that and the other. Well, there's some documentary about, I guess it's Sub Pop maybe, and the band Mudhoney?
Mudhoney.
Mm-hmm. You know, the main guy from Mudhoney works in their warehouse as the guy that ships out the packages. Because, you know, he needs insurance and a steady income just like everybody else. And I thought that was a really cool thing to see because, you know, Mudhoney are a fairly lauded band. But that also shows that the guy's human. So I like
and what,
him.
And what's he going to do when they're not touring, you know what I mean? You know, sometimes I think people forget, you know, bands got to have some downtime because if they're always playing out all the time, they burn out after a while, you know?
Yeah, so, if you don't have, if you're not able to fill a football stadium, you got to, you know, work in a warehouse sometime, you know?
Yeah, most bands don't. Not even some of the bigger bands don't play in smaller places now.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's great, you know, more intimate anyway, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to go to a concert and see some fly on a stage that's so small, you know, that it's a disconnect.
Your spirit.